He's 15, or thereabouts. He thought he'd be home by Christmas. That was what they were told when they were given their red coats and shipped across the ocean to put down the Rebs, that it wouldn't take more than a couple of months. But it's December already, and in New Jersey the snows are as dense as cake, and he thinks now that every soldier is told that. Home soon. He wonders whether it's ever been true. If the boy were in a German regiment, he could speak his own tongue at least. None of the English have even heard of Anhalt-Zerbst, let alone the village he lives in. Another points out that he's a foot or two short of a full one, so they settle on half Bosch. Not soon then, but how much longer? The Redcoats took hard losses at Fort Mercer, but cleaned out Fort Lee at the end of November. The rats are in retreat, and it's this regiment's job to squeeze them out of New Jersey. There's a line of men of Hopewell outside the garrison every morning wanting to sign allegiance papers, not that it proves much. Washington's Reb Army couldn't have held together on its flight to Pennsylvania if this countryside weren't riddled with traitors making muskets and shot for the Rebs, supplying them with cloth for their backs and salt for their meat. Some of this regiment have wives near their time. Others say their wives are too pretty to leave alone. They all gripe about the endlessness of this war campaign. In the night, under the blanket, he thinks of his bed at home in his village of Anhalt-Zerbst and the way the fur tip-taps against the window, and he weeps until he shakes. His bunkmate mutters, "Give that little worm of yours a rest." Filthy talk is how they pass the time. In the freezing rains of December, there's nothing to do but wait. Then one day, the sky's clear. The land around Hopewell is as hard as a drum. "Good hunting weather," somebody says. So the hunt is what they call it. The major isn't happy, but the captain only shakes his head and tells him, "The men must have a bit of fun." Houghton and Byrne and Williams and the boy started a farmhouse on the edge of town. Muskets at the ready in case they flush out any Rebs. The boy's stomach is tight, as on the verge of battle. Nobody answers the door until Byrne smashes the fanlight. Then they hear running feet and the bar lifting. Byrne grabs the maid by her skirts, but Williams says, "Hold hard, man! Where's your mistress? Where's everybody hiding?" She shakes her head, already sobbing. The boy edges to one side. "Where are you off to, half Bosch?" "Search the house." "That's a lad," says Houghton, undoing his buttons one by one. Upstairs, the corridors are silent, except for the creakings his steps make. Far below him, he can hear dull voices, then screaming that stops all at once. The boy peers into each room, taking his time. What will he do if he finds the ladies? Yankee whores. Reb whores. He goes down the back stairs. In the kitchen, he eats a pickle from a jar. It's weaker than his mother's. It hardly tastes at all. He strokes the grain of an old settle, reads a sampler on the wall. Something clinks. He follows the small sound into the pantry, which seems to be empty, until he opens a small door and finds a girl crouching in the meat safe. Her hands fly to her ears. "Monkey," he says under his breath. "That's hardly civil." He points. "Hands on ears, like the monkey in the picture." She lowers her hands reluctantly. "Which picture?" Pale ears jut through her gleaming hair. "Like a pixie," he thinks. "Hear no bad." "Oh, hear no evil, I see." She's crawling out and standing up, taller than he was expecting. A shiny apron, the kind that's just for show, a locket on a ribbon. "You're not English," she says accusingly. "Nein. He only slips when he's flustered. A mercenary, like something rotten in her mouth." The boy must be looking blank because she explains, "You serve for pay, for money." "No money," he tells her, which reminds him to examine the shelves. He finds a basket, grabs some jars, a cake and paper, the first dark bottle his hands fall on. "Then what brings you all the way to New Jersey?" she asks, close behind him. "My prince sold me to the Redcoats." He crams three more bottles in on top of the cake. How could he sell you when you're as white as me? Scoffs the girl. And then, that's my aunt's best cherry brandy you're stealing. Requisitioning, he says, tripping over the English syllables. Half bosh! The voice is Burns, faint but getting nearer. The boy shoots out of the pantry with his basket. Drink! He roars. I found drink! He doesn't have time to look back. He thinks about her, though. That night, in the barracks, when men are swapping dirty stories and Williams and Houghton and Byrne are going on and all about the maid at the deserted farm, the boy pretends the brandy has put him to sleep. There's a rumour going round Washington's Reb Army will melt away on New Year's Day when the terms of service for most of his recruits comes to an end. The boy tries to imagine being home for the spring planting. The next day, the hunt is on again. The redcoats trawl through Hopewell. There are scarlet ribbons on almost every door by now, but ribbons cheap. It says loyalty without proving it. They knock on every door and shout, "Bring out your females!" The boy stands guard outside the surgery while the others are inside with the doctor's wife and daughter. After half an hour, William sticks his head out of the window to say, "Come on it, half-boss, time we made a man of you." He pulls a face. Still sick from the damn brandy. Williams grins and bangs the window shut so hard that an icicle falls like a spear. "Let's go back to the farm," Houghton proposes that night. In the morning, the fields crack like glass under the soldiers' boots. The boy doesn't want to be walking this way again, and he wants it more than anything. They get there in half an hour, and this time they go round to the back door. A stealth attack. But the place is deserted. No sign of the maid, either. The three Englishmen troop upstairs, and the boy heads straight for the pantry. The girl's there. As he knew she'd be. She has some cheese for him. It's surprisingly strong. He finds himself telling her about the day he cut a purse from a gentleman's back backing Anhalt Zerbst. "I knew you were a thief," he shrugs. "You're a Reb." "I am not." Too loud for the pantry. "I'm as loyal as you like. I never asked to come to this nest of traitors." Her hands shoot up to cup her ears. 2 feet away, he watches the tears brim along her lashes. "My father was in the cavalry," she tells him. "So the Rebs confiscated our farm in Pennsylvania, turned us out with only bedding and a plate each. Said my brother had to stay and join the Patriot Army." Her voice skids. "Mama sent us 3 elder girls off to relations to be safe. She didn't know my aunt in Hopewell was a turncoat. And my cousins," she says, almost spitting. "They treat me like a rag to wipe their fingers on. They grudge me my dinner. They won't lend me so much as a petticoat." His heart thumps dully in his chest. "Where are they hiding, your aunt and cousins?" Her pupils contract. I don't know, a long way away," she says, without conviction. "When did they leave?" She shrugs. Her hands creep up through her hair. He shocks himself by taking them in his. "Pretty ears. Don't cover them. You're making fun." "Beautiful." She finds him an apple, a knife to peel it, a slice for him, a slice for her. When he tries to kiss her, she pulls away, but slowly. Should he have asked first? Should he have insisted? "Tell me where they are, these cousins who treat you so badly," he says instead. "It's just the elder girl, really. The men, the others in my company, they want women," he flushes absurdly. Her fingertips are pressing her ears to her head again, as if to stop them flying away. "I must bring some women, you understand? Not you." She says something very low. "What's that?" "In the hayloft," she says, still whispering. In the barn, the boy is the last up the ladder. A child wails in the lap of a graying lady. A tall girl shrinks behind her. "Well, well, well," cries Houghton, rubbing his hands like some villain on a stage. The aunt straightens up. "If it you please, sir." "Oh, you're going to please me well enough, madam. You're going to please every single one of us." Williams whoops at that. "And anyone who puts up a fuss will get their ears cut off." The boy hangs back. mutters something about going for a drink. "Come now, for the glory of the regiment," says Byrne, grabbing him by the elbow. "Fire away, which do you fancy, fresh meat or well-aged?" The older lady's eyes are as grey as his mother's. The thing seems to go on for hours. He waits at the door of the barn, shivering in his thin red jacket. That night, he's the butt of the whole barracks. The captain puts his thumb on the boy's collarbone. "What's this I hear? Can't raise the regimental colours for the glory of King George?" The boy doesn't know what the right answer is. "Last chance, half Bosch," announces Houghton. "Tomorrow, the Major's off to Princeton for 3 days, so we're going to bring the tastiest fillies in Hopewell back to the garrison. If you don't produce some manner of female and show us you know how to put her through her paces..." "The point is," says the captain, leaning in, breath fragrant with gin, "are you a girl or a man?" He shifts his grip from collarbone to throat. "I had one already," says the boy, pulling away in a fury of terror. "At the farm, I found her the first day, much prettiest." "Oh, keeping the best for yourself, you rat," Byrne cackles and smacks his shoulder. "Well, bring her back tomorrow and show us what you're made of." What he's made of, it's not a phrase the boy has heard before. It makes him think of the gingerbread boy who ran and ran until the fox snapped him up. He wakes before dawn and lies like a corpse. He can't feel his feet. He finds himself thinking of his mother's softly creased hands setting down a bowl of borscht before him. He shoves the memory away. His mother would not know him. He sees, as clear as lightning, that he will never go home. By noon, he's kneeling beside the girl in the pantry. He tries not to hear the shouting in the distance. "They hate me," she says again. "How do they know it was..." "They don't. They hated me before. But now they hate me because I wasn't in the hayloft. My aunt's demented. Her pupils are huge and dark. The little one's not 12. I never thought..." "I wasn't there," he whispers, eyes down. "Yankee whores. Rebel whores. She's been bleeding all night." The distant voices are rising. Clarity seizes him. "You come with me now," he says, jerking his head in the direction of the fields. "Run away with you? Are you mad? I couldn't dream it," she says, but her face is bright. She's misunderstood him, but he sees his chance. He leans in and kisses her. It's not what he was expecting. Lighter, more feathery. "I barely know you," she says. She's smiling so widely that he knows he's won, and something sinks in his chest. "I won't go without you," he says. "But my aunt, my..." "Where are you going?" He hesitates. "Who knows? They'll catch you, won't they?" He manages a shrug. He gets to his feet, not letting go of her hand. "Let me run upstairs and pack my trunk." The boy shakes his head, alarmed at the thought of having to carry such a thing. "No time, little monkey. Just your coat." Outside, panting from the hurry, she's daunted by the icy fields. "Don't you have anything for me to ride?" "I'll lift you over the puddles," the girl laughs. "Nah, I can jump them." And for a moment, as they set off across the meadow, hand in hand like children, he lets himself believe that they are running away. But all the while, he knows how it's going to be. He will lead her into the barracks that must already be filling up with other girls, girls with torn sleeves and bloody noses and scalps, Reb girls and loyal girls whose eyes will tell this girl all she needs to know. When the captain claps and orders Half Bosch to fire away, this girl will start to scream, and the boy will reach down with frozen fingers and undo his buttons one by one.